Hello, everybody out there. Here's Guillermo and I'm Carla.
This is our new podcast where you'll meet the Trickshot mindset from the inside visionaries.
Buckle up and enjoy.
Welcome.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 3, body language. So I want to talk a little bit about body language and how it's used in acting. For example, Meryl Streep and Leonardo DiCaprio and all these different famous people, they use this kind of tactic to get us to read between the lines. For example, there's these things called micro expressions and we read them subconsciously, but there are people who are really, really good at reading them, like naturally.
Like your mom when you're lying?
Like your mom when you're lying, like Guillermo. Guillermo knows how to read people with their micro expressions, like having your hand straight down when someone wants you to stop, but they don't want to tell you, like they're hiding it. They have their hand straight down and out, like as if you put it right in front of you, it's actually saying to stop.
That does happen to me a lot.
Yeah.
A specific person in this room.
Okay.
So also something that I would like to add to what Carla is explaining is like how body language enhances even sometimes even more than the words itself from the script, from the scene. You can tell way more from what the scene is about, what the character is going through by body language than what they're actually saying. Because let's say, for example, I'm saying I'm a big giant of 6 foot tall. But then with my eyes, you can see how I move, how I'm conflicted about it. So I'm not only telling you the information through the dialogue, but I'm also telling you information through my body language. So Carla, I know you have a lot of experience of body language as an actress.
Yes, that $14 million budget film that came out in 2017, Skybound, definitely taught me a lot about how to use my body language to portray my character. There were a lot of tactics. There's also like thinking about somebody else that makes you connect to that person in order to be that character. But there's also specific body languages like standing behind somebody while they're sitting down, that actually causes a certain intimidation. It's an intimidation tactic, not just in real life, but also in film. Also, taking up someone's space, someone's personal space, when people see that and that that person is okay, comfortable, not even looking at the other person, just letting them take a part of their personal space, that shows us certain intimacy. So for like couples, that works. When people are holding hands or walking in sync, that also is a tactic to show intimacy. So that's something that Channing Tatum shows in his movies. And I don't know if you want to talk about Meryl Streep and the movie Doubt.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, while you were talking about it, I was thinking about Doubt, the 2008 film starring Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman, where in this iconic scene where Amy Adams tells Meryl Streep that she might think that the priest Hoffman is behaving in a really, how you call it without saying the word? Inappropriate way. Pedophile. With the kid in the church, Meryl Streep decides to meet with him in her office and confront him. And what it first became an accusation, it seemed, it turns out to be more like the priest trying to protect one of the kids to stay in the altar boys group because he was caught with alcohol breath. But it turns out to be that he, because of the desperation of being orphaned, he took some of the wine that they use in the church during the ceremonies. And for some reason, even though Meryl Streep is a wonderful actress, he decided to stay mostly in Hoffman because while Meryl Streep was talking to him and accusing him and trying to unfold the truth, you can see in his eyes and the way he looks back that he's not trying to hide anything. He's more like trying to protect them from the truth. So one of the altar boys could stay in the group instead of, you know, anybody else knowing about it. And I think that also comes down a lot from the famous iconic scene of the opening of The Godfather. I know Don Carla is not like a big fan, guys, but well, that's okay. What a lot of people don't know is that in the whole running time of that film, Marlon Brando was only screen time alone during 8 minutes of the whole film. And by that, he won the Oscar for Best Actor, which he didn't accept, by the way. He's been only one of the two actors who didn't accept his Oscar. But we'll talk about that in another podcast.
No, let's talk about it now. Why did he not accept?
Okay, this is off topic. However, the whole reason why Marlon Brando didn't accept his Oscar was because at that time, there has been a lot of repercussions against the Native Americans reservations. And since there's been rumors that he was dating an Indian woman at the time, he was certainly against it. And he felt that Hollywood wasn't giving it a proper place to the Native American community. And instead, they were exploiting them and portraying them in films like Ignorance among the Westerns. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is that in that film, all that he does before he even says his first lines is just listening to one of the people who is visiting him for a request of basically make the guy who made his daughter suffers to pay in pain. And all that he's doing is just cuddling with the cat. And that just tells us how come then this gangster, tough, violent person seems so caring and so sweet with an animal. And that's because among others, people believe the Godfather is not only a criminal, but he has certain rules. Because at first, the person is requesting from him to kill the guy, but his daughter didn't get killed. She's still alive. She's just beat up. So he decides that fair is fair. And a person who is fair and spend time with his family, even more than their business, is a man who deserves help from the family.
So I also wanted to talk about the body language in Silence of the Lambs.
Dolly!
Anthony Hopkins' character, Hannibal. There was a scene where he was in jail and Clarence Starling, or Jodie Foster, was the actress who came to visit him and interview him, ask him some questions. And most of the time, Hannibal did not blink. And that caused the most intimidation for her, for Jodie Foster, for that character. And he seemed very, very calm and very, very direct. But at the same time, the fact that he did not blink made him that much more creepy. When he sniffed the air, telling her that he could smell her, very specifically a specific body part, it was just that much more intimidating. And the way that Anthony Hopkins portrayed it, you guys should watch at least that scene. It's just the body language. It's about eyes, like the eyes direction, the blinking, the facial expressions, the body as like, it's the way your hands are, your feet are, if they're in the same stride as somebody else, it's the way they hold hands, if it's interlaced, which hand is on top, which hand is on the bottom. The hand on top is usually the one that's leading the conversation or more dominant in the relationship or whatever. Presidents use these kinds of body language as well. That's why they're always trying to stand on the right side when they're taking a picture, when they shake hands, because then the right side is the hand that's on top. And that's why there's some presidents that shake both hands so that their other hand can be on top. Or they pat somebody on the back. That's another way of saying that person is dominant. Or when they open someone's door, the person who is going in and the person who's holding the door is dominant. And the person who's going in is represented as the weaker person. So that's why sometimes politicians or world leaders, they tend to try to hold doors for people, but it's a power move for the cameras, for the media, because subliminally, this is all represented. That's the way we perceive it as humans, as who is the weaker, who is more dominant, what is this body language saying? There's even in The Queen, the TV show Queen, no, yes. The Crown.
The Crown.
About The Queen. They talk about Margarita, the sister
Margaret.
Of The Queen. Margaret. She has an affair with a married man and it's all quiet, but because one of the reporters noticed that she took a piece of lint off of his coat in one of the events, that is an act of intimacy. And they read into that, they did research, and then they printed a story about it. So she was found out.
So you think on the whole chivalry of men opening the door for the lady is a representation of us trying to be dominant over women?
That is how it's seen. Throughout the world, the weaker sex goes in the door, the stronger sex opens the door. Imagine an older person. You open the door for them if it's too heavy, right? So they can't open the door on their own, so you do it for them. You are being chivalrous or nice, but actually it's a power move.
There you go, girls. You open the door for your man, so you're on top.
So yeah, so that's why some women don't like it when men open doors for them, because they see they're not sure if it's a machista kind of like a power move, or if it's actually something that they're trying to be nice for, which either case can be true. You don't know until you like know more and more about that person. But in the beginning, like women, they can either react either way. That's why it's...
How do you react?
It's actually, it's hard to tell. So for me, if I'm never going to see that person again, I'm fine with them holding the door. Like I'm not going to get to know them. It's fine. I don't care. But if I do get to know them and I find out that actually it was a power play, I don't let them do it again.
I wish that happened to me when I paid for dinner. They don't let me, but they do let me. Ladies, if you want to do a power move, please. Please, you pay for the dinner. I'm totally cool with it. We're cool with it. Oh, we're cool. You know, we don't need that much. We don't need to go to that new sushi vegan fusion restaurant. Just pay for the Burger King, man.
Some guys don't like that. They want to be powerful. So
I don't care. You can buy my burger anytime.
Okay, so as a former actress, or even now, when I try to go to an audition and I try to stand out from the crowd, I use certain tactics. Like one tactic would be to invoke sympathy. Let's say I'm playing the innocent protagonist girl. Okay, then I would try to bite my lower lip a lot. Why? Because that invokes sympathy. That's something that's even used with presidents as well. Like when Clinton did his public apology, they told him to bite his lower lip a lot because that invokes sympathy. He just did it as many times as he could. And if you ever watch that video of him apologizing, pay attention because you'll see. That's one of the things he kept doing. If I'm playing a villain or something, I don't really use... I try to stand up straight a lot more, but in terms of... I use a little other tactic, which is more like when I do my makeup, I do sharper lines. For example, my eyebrows would be sharper rather than rounder. Because even in Disney movies, you can see that the villains have sharper edges to invoke danger. And the good guys always have rounded edges. Think of Aladdin. Aladdin has rounded eyebrows. And Jafar has super sharp features because he's the villain. So it's also a subliminal message as well that has been fed to us through even from childhood.
Okay, I got it. There is no better example for body language than the silent era. Before sound was a thing during movies, all they really had to work with was the story and how they will be portrayed and evoked through body language. I think the master of body language is Charlie Chaplin, where the whole reason why he didn't want to have the trap, his iconic character, to speak was because he didn't think that people will connect with his spoke humor. So if we go back to like modern times, one scene that really stuck with me is how they are like, for those who haven't seen it, modern times is basically a portrait of how the industrial war has taken out of jobs a lot of people by that time, by the early 40s. In the movie Modern Times, basically Charlie Chaplin, after getting fired from his factory working position, he goes to jail. And then he gets released because of his charisma. He meets this homeless lady who becomes their best friends with. And, you know, ideally probably like a loving partner. And they're both like running from the cops and they don't have nowhere to go. And then they both stopping a bench. Behind them there is a house. This guy goes to work and then give her a kiss to his wife. All that he does is point it out. And then they start to imagine how their life would be there. In something as simple as having somewhere to rest and like a roof over their heads. But even then, when you see them laying on the grass with nothing but themselves, they are still smiling without any words spoken to me that evoke that sometimes in life you should be happy with the little things. You can always aim for more, but you shouldn't be obsessed with the future if you don't enjoy the present. Another underrated and very unknown film that portrays this whole body language thing is Where Are My Children? Directed by, surprisingly, girls, a woman called Luz Weber. She's one of the pioneers in the silent era, and she would normally go by a surname, or in the credits it would say that she was directed by her and another guy, but obviously it was directed by her. In this film, basically shows how an aristocracy family in Los Angeles at the beginning of the 1910s have this whole argument about abortion. And through the film, you see the desperation of the women of not wanting to commit solely to be a mother, but that's expected from them. So everybody seems to be happy for them that they're going to become a mother, but they seem kind of like delusional and hopeless, because back then that was the holy purpose of a woman to exist, to procreate. That's why I really think that a lot of filmmakers from the past era say that cinema went downhill from the moment that there was sound, because everything besides that was like theater. That's why a lot of actors who used to do theater transitioned to the silent era, but didn't really transition that well to the sound era. Well, also in my experience as a director, I've noticed that I end up casting the people who give me something beyond the words that I'm reading on the script by moving a certain way, even if it's using a room for the casting. And they will pace themselves depending on what the dialogue is, for even if it's for a split second, for dramatic purposes. So for example, I remember like 4 years ago, I was doing my first big project and it was called Memoria. And it was basically about how this guy ended up in some sort of limbo, and he just find himself with a devil or like a subconscious figure of himself. I already had the person that I wanted for that man called Stanley, but I didn't have like my devil. And I remember like going through 3 different casting days, but everybody just read the words. But since they were long dialogue pieces coming from the devil, I needed something else. And then I think his name was Gregory Monteverde. I don't know. He was Italian. And basically, I remember him waiting for like 5 seconds before he started talking. He looked at me if I was the character. He went around. He pretended he was smoking a cigarette. And then he turned the chair to the other way, sit down, and then he started giving his dialogue. And even if as seamless as it looks like, to me, gave it like another depth to the scene, because it showed me that since he's the dead, and then I asked him, why did you take that time? I like it, but why did you take your time to like deliver the lines instead of just going for it? And he told me, think about it, Guillermo. If I'm the devil and I've gone through this before, I have the whole time of the war. Why to rush it? Is because if this is not only what I do, but this is also my pleasure. This is people suffering of anxiety and the thriller, that's my thrill. And I just have all the time in the world to torture them. So why would you give away all the answers when you have them if you can just tease them? And I don't know. That stuck with me. And even nowadays, I remember like every time that we cast somebody for a certain role, especially if it's like a dramatic thing, we always look at what they're doing, not only what they're saying. Because if you only say it, then you might as well just get a voiceover actor.
Right. Actually, one audition I did, I read a monologue of a book. I think it's also a movie. It's called Of Mice and Men. And there was a part in the script that actually said, like, the actress actually says, "Are you listening?" And I used that moment to use that dramatic pause. Like, right after that, just, "Are you listening?" I would be acting, looking at something else, saying my monologue, and then when that line came up, I'd actually look directly at to see if they were listening, right? But also to kind of break that fourth wall.
Did you get the role?
I did. I don't know if this ever happened to you, because it didn't happen to me, but when I'm on the other side of the chair, I like to tell the actor to play. I like to tell them to, okay, say the line the way you rehearsed it or studied it or whatever in the last 5 seconds, because they literally get like 5 seconds sometimes to look over the lines, and they say it. And then I tell them, okay, now say it this way, like say it joyfully, or say it. I give them a verb, play this verb. And I get a lot more out of them that way.
I always wonder, how do you direct your thesis film, Subtle Control, and that the scene where the protagonist is having those repetitive dreamy scenes because there is no dialogue there. So how do you direct her through that? Because that's all body language.
The scenes where he has the flashbacks of what he did to her?
No. The black screen scenes when he's like, when she's licking a wire.
When she's a puppet.
Uh-huh.
I basically told her what a scene was, what she's supposed to be, and who she's looking at, and who's controlling her. And I just, there weren't any lines in those scenes because they're dreams. They're just visual. At least not all of it is dreams, but just there's at least two or three dreams in that movie. And, in that one, there's no dialogue. There's actually a lot of very specific sounds that have to do with like a violin, but like the shrill of a violin, not actually like a song kind of violin, to emphasize the lines that are tied around her wrist. And when I told her to smile, I told her it has to be super forced, like sure, like there's strings pulling her cheeks back. So I just painted a picture for her and I had her try it out. And then if it worked, then I did that. But when it's more like a dramatic scene, like she's being attacked or whatever, I let them go through it a few times and until they're at that point where they feel almost like desperate enough to play as hard as they can to get the scene.
Well, we're watching before starting the podcast, Lied to Me, the TV show, and you were mentioning something about like looking at the left and then looking at the right when somebody's asking you a question. Can you?
So we have different sides of our brain. One side, it's about imagination. It's also connected to lying because you're using your imagination to fabricate whatever you're going to say. And then to look in the other side is to remember, is to actually look through your memories. So I'm not 100% sure about if it's the right side or the left side that you look at to fabricate or whatever, but I know that from that show, even from the first episode, the pilot, you can already see that what they say is when you look away, you're actually trying to remember when someone asks you a question and you're trying to answer truthfully, you're actually looking for the truth. When you look straight in their eyes, that is more of an indication, at least 90%, that you're lying.
So there you go, guys. So next time, if your girlfriend or your boyfriend is looking away when you ask them if they remember your anniversary, then they're trying to actually remember.
Yeah.
So I'm Guillermo.
And I'm Carla, and this is Trick Shot
Mindset.
Yeah.
Till next time, guys.